Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shivati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namani Namaste Sarasvati Devai Gauravani Pacharani Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paska Chaudi Satarani Vanchakapa Chivashchaki Pasindaviva Tapati Tanam Pavanivyo Vaishnavivyo Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So I would like to really thank all of you who turned in your questions. I would like
Recording in progress.
I would like to reiterate that the questions make the class much richer and deeper. Those of you who do the questions, your learning will be deeper, you will remember what you've learned more, it will have more of an effect on you. And I've integrated the answers to the questions into the presentation. Now, I did have one person who asked questions on Chapter 22, which I did not integrate because we're not doing Chapter 22, we did that last time. We're doing Chapter 25. And so I'd like to remind all of you to please reference the syllabus. We are not necessarily doing one chapter a week. In some cases, we're doing several chapters a week. So please reference the syllabus. Okay. Very good. This is the southern section of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, chapters 20 to 34, the Nectar Devotion. And again, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the devotional mellow of the nectar ocean. And in this southern ocean, we look at the five components of rasa, vibhava, anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, Vyavichari Bhava, and Stai Bhava. And we are still in the first wave of Vibhava. We are doing part two of the first wave. I realize that there's a lot of Sanskrit terms, and this is a little complicated and a little technical. But if you feel yourself starting to panic about all of the words and all of the technicalities, please just take a deep breath. Remember that Krishna is matas matir gyanam apohanam cha, that he can give us remembrance. Now, vibhava, we've given an overall term to vibhava, as stimulants, that all the vibhava are stimulants. Again, here we're looking at part two of the stimulants, which is just chapter 25, so we are only doing chapter 25 in this presentation. All right, so here are the different components. I'd like you just for a minute, look away from the screen and see if you can write them down. I'm going to give you a minute. Look away from the screen and see if you can write them down from memory and then check back up at the screen. Okay, we're going to do this now with the English. Again, look away from the screen. See how many you can write from memory and then check what you've done by looking back up at the screen. All right, we had a very excellent question, and that was this basic connection. Srila Prabhupada uses a translation of continuous ecstasy. And someone asked a very thoughtful question. Why does something that's continuous need stimulants? And the answer is because that basic connection, the Stai Bhava, it's ever increasing and dynamic. So it's being stimulated on and on to dynamically increase. So the stimulants, the vibhav, has two parts, basic, as Prabhupada calls them, basic and impelling. The basic is the alambana. The alambana takes care of Krishna himself, who is the basic stimulant for art relationship, and the devotee. The devotee also stimulates our relationship with Krishna. And this class is going to be entirely on the second part of the alambana, the ashraya, the devotee who's the reservoir or shelter of affection. And here we're going to be looking at different categories of devotees who can shelter our affection for Krishna. So again, vibhava, it refers to two types of alambana, two types of basic stimulus. The person in relation to who our basic connection, our staibhav, our rati, our experience, which is Krishna, the vishaya, and the person in whom this rati and staibhav, the basic connection, our experience, that's the ashraya, and the udipana, various other stimulants. So why did we call, we gave in these presentations a simple, this was another question, we gave a simple definition of vibhav in general as being stimulants. And why do we say that? And we also say the udipana is stimulants. that is like you have New York State, but you have New York City within New York State. You have the state of Hawaii, which is an island chain, and you also have one of those islands is named Hawaii. So for simplification, we are calling, in this presentation, we are calling all of vibhava stimulants, but the udipana are specifically stimulants. They're all stimulants. And again, Srila Prabhupada uses the word basic and impelling. The alambana is basic. It's to our staibhav, to our continuous ecstasy, to our basic connection, the alambana is the basic stimulant. Krishna, the vishaya, is the object. If one has a parental staibhav, a parental basic connection, the main object of that is Krishna, and everything about Krishna is the main stimulant. The other devotees who have a parental connection are the main shelter. They're another main stimulant of one's parental connection. And then there's all kinds of other things which also stimulated Krishna's ankle bells and so forth. All right. Now we're going to look at chapter 25, and here's a summary. That Srila Prabhupada begins by saying that even though, like Krishna has so many qualities, so do the devotees. And he says there's two categories, sadhaka and siddhas. We're going to look at our overall outline. Devotee as ashraya, some general points. Some general points. Then categories of devotees by attainment. So sadhaka devotees and siddha devotees. In siddha devotees, we're going to look at devotees who've attained siddha, who were conditioned souls and became siddha, either by sadhana or by mercy. So two subcategories of that. Those who have always been siddha. We're also going to look in the second half of the presentation at devotees in terms of rasa. And then we do have a final overall discussion of a really good question that two or three of you asked. Some of you asked that question for this class, and some of you asked that previously for the other class. All right, so what are some general points about devotees as ashraya? So one question is, are devotees an alambana? Are they a basic stimulus? Or are they an udipana? Are they a general stimulus? And the answer is that they can be either. Just like Krishna's qualities can also be udipana, if they're seen somewhat separately from Krishna, which we discussed last class, and we'll be discussing that again next class. So Jiva Goswami gives a commentary on 2.1.273. And a number of you asked about these statements. We have one on 2.1.73 and one on 2.1.16, which we'll look at on the next slide. So let's say you're a devotee whose sthayi bhav, whose basic connection, is that of friendship, sakya bhav. You have a mood that you're one of Krishna's cowherd boys. So the other cowherd boys would be for you ashraya. And devotees in other sthayi bhavs would be udipana. Now, that's not absolute demarcation, because here Jiva Goswami in 2.1.16 says it's possible for others to be ashraya, but generally those who have other sthayi bhavs act as udipanas, and those in the same sthayi bhav as yourself act as alambana ashraya. So whatever basic connection you have, other devotees with the same basic connection are ashraya. Other devotees who have different but compatible basic connections are udipanas. Now this implies that we're dealing with people who have some realization of their sthayi bhavs. Okay. So we're going to look now at the category of ashraya according to advancement and attainment. And in this first half of the class, we're going to look at all but the nityasiddhas. We'll look at the nityasiddhas in the second half. So there's basically two big categories. One category is the sadhakas, those who are not yet perfect. And the other category is those who've already become, who are already perfect. And then there's three subcategories of them. So, sadhaka. Now, how is sadhaka defined in this regard? How is sadhaka defined in this regard? Keep in mind that in order to be a basic impelling stimulant, in order to be in the category of alambana ashraya of the vibhava, don't get scared by all the words, you got the vibhava as the basic, as the overall stimulant, alambana is what's basic, and you have Krishna as the object and you have ashraya as the reservoir. In order to be an ashraya, one has to have some realization of one's sthayi bhav, of one's basic connection with Krishna. Neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental, conjugal. However, someone may not yet be free of anartas and have realized their sthayi bhav. Has to be, because raganuga sadhana is predicated on realization of one's sthayi bhav to some extent. You can't engage in raganuga sadhana without knowing something of your basic connection with Krishna. It's impossible. What raganuga sadhana is demands it. But it's still a sadhana for sadhakas. Now, we find that Rupa Goswami explains this very clearly, that these people can be the shelter of what impels us to love God, even though they are practicing devotees not free of impurities. And we're going to have a discussion in just a few minutes. So I want you to start thinking of who those sort of people might be for you, even if you haven't realized your sthayi bhav yourself. Now, Rupa Goswami gives this example from the 11th canto, and I find this very important, because he also gives an example of a certain person. And therefore, as some of our ISKCON devotees comment that these sadhakas must be in bhava. But bhava is not sadhana. Bhava is the beginning of siddha. It's not sadhana, although there may still be some anartas in bhava. Sadhana would have to be at least like nista, ruchi, and ashakti. And by Rupa Goswami referencing the 11th canto, where he's referencing the Majjhima devotees. There's many different ways of explaining in Majjhima. Majjhima literally means middle. So we have many different ways of saying who's in the middle. And this is something that's discussed or should be discussed. At least we discuss it in our Bhakti Shastri program. I'm not sure, you know, in your own Bhakti Shastri programs, but it should be discussed. There's a definition of Majjhima from the Nectar of Instruction, which is according to, are you first initiated, second initiated, or do you never criticize anybody? There's a definition of Majjhima earlier in the Nectar Devotion in terms of qualification to take up Vaidhi Sadhana, how much faith and knowledge do you have in the Shastra. We can find others, is your chanting offensive, clearing, or pure? But the most often used definition of the Majjhima devotee is this one from the 11th canto. Someone who has faith and love in God, someone who's in friendship with the devotees, merciful to the ignorant, and uninterested in the non-devotees. So this is, one would have to be at this stage in order to be in this category of ashraya, shelter. And Srila Prabhupada here is talking about the sattvika bhavs. We'll be discussing sattvika bhavs in a later class. But here he says that these devotees will exhibit some of the sattvika bhavs, which means that some of the sattvika bhavs are experienced by sadhakas. Of course, when we study sattvika bhavs, we'll find that some of these involuntary expressions of love are sometimes even experienced by non-devotees in a shadow capacity. So Prabhupada says those who are crying at this, tears will knock out the fire of conditional life, and the shivering shows that one is nearing perfection. So these are some signs that one is in this category of Majjhima, although sometimes kanistas and even non-devotees have some abhas, some semblance of the sattvika bhavs. All right, and the examples given of Bilvamangala Thakur. Now, Bilvamangala Thakur is certainly very elevated. And so, again, some people have hypothesized that the example given of Bilvamangala Thakur would mean that this ashraya does not apply to devotees below bhava. My own contention is that Rupa Goswami's citing the 11th canto nullifies that conclusion. Okay, so I'd like us to take 10 minutes here to discuss in our groups how devotees who are still sadhakas inspire us. And I thought that this fact is obviously true because throughout our sangha, throughout our society, we are regularly hearing from, we're hearing classes from, we're reading the books of persons who still have anartas, persons who are still cultivating devotional service, but those persons act as a stimulant for our own devotional service. So we're going to break up into groups. We're going to have 10 minutes. And I'd like us to discuss the principle, not asking you to name particular devotees, but I'd like you to discuss among yourselves the principle of how is it that someone who still has an artist, they still have faults, they're a sincere sadhaka, how can they be a shelter for this impetus of ecstatic love? So we're going to break up into groups now. I think Shakti Swarupini is going to do that. Hope you had a good discussion. Okay. So I hope you had a good discussion, and to really meditate on how it is that we can feel inspired by devotees who have faults, who are still in the process, and how the pure devotees, you know, Mother Yasoda, Lalita, they're inspired by sadhaka devotees. They find sadhaka devotees being a stimulus for ecstatic love. All right. Now we're going to go on to the siddha devotees, the perfect devotees, those who are already perfect in devotional service, as being, again, the shelter of the basic impelling for one's own love for Krishna. So what is the basic thing? Again, Krishna is the object and the devotees is the shelter that's impelling one's own love for Krishna. So now we're looking at the perfected devotees. So what do we mean by perfected devotees? We have some explanation of what do we mean by perfected devotees. So one is a devotee who's never tired of executing devotional service and is always engaged in Krishna conscious activities, constantly relishing the transcendental mellows in relationship with Krishna. I frankly found this description very nourishing. Because I know I'm not a siddha, and the fact that I may sometimes say, oh, I feel tired of doing devotional service, I can't do it right now, means I'm not a siddha. And it's like, oh, okay. You know, sometimes I think sadhakas try to artificially pretend to be siddhas. This is a very nice definition of a siddha. It reminds us, of course, in the Upadesha Amrita, of those who are undeviating in their devotional service. All right. Now, I also found this part of the description of siddhas being very interesting. That Rupa Goswami makes the point, he quotes from the Bhagavatam, 11:20:33, that siddhas may still have some interest in the four goals of life, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. It's like, wow. And still there's siddhas. Now we had someone asked a question about liberation. And yes, siddha devotees can want to go back home, back to Godhead. First of all, practically everybody in Vaikuntha wants some sort of liberation in Vaikuntha. And they're still siddha devotees. So wanting to go back to home, back to Godhead, wanting to have some sort of liberation for service, not wanting to have some sort of liberation for one's own sense gratification. All right. So how does one become a siddha? So there's two main ways that conditioned souls become a siddha. One is by sadhana. So we have sadhana siddhas, those who become perfect by sadhana. We have kripa siddhas, those who become perfect by mercy without doing sadhana. Either they didn't do any sadhana at all, or they did only a minor amount of sadhana. And if we're going to look entirely, we'd say those also who are always perfect. They weren't conditioned souls. So these are the three categories of siddha devotees. Again, all in this ashraya of the alambana of vibhava. Vibhava in general is what brings out our love for Krishna. And we have this basic, which is Krishna and the devotee, and among the devotees who can bring out love for Krishna, even in the pure devotees, we have the sadhakas and the siddhas. We've talked about the sadhakas already, now we're talking about the siddhas. And we've got these three main categories of siddhas. Okay. So some examples of those who are siddha who became siddha by sadhana. Now, we should mention that as soon as someone becomes a siddha, even if they became a siddha by sadhana, let's go back to the other slide, even if they became a siddha by sadhana or by kripa, once someone becomes a siddha, they're then considered nitya siddha, because it goes beyond time. So keep that in mind. So Markandeya Rishi is given by Rupa Goswami as an example of a sadhana siddha, a person who became perfect in devotional service through sadhana. Another example would be Narada Muni. And someone asked me the question about Narada. Is Narada sadhana siddha or nitya siddha? In Narada's life as the son of a maidservant, he's certainly a sadhana siddha. Once he becomes the son of Lord Brahma, he's considered a nitya siddha because he was siddha from the beginning of that life. He didn't perform any sadhana in that life, but he is a sadhana siddha. Achieving perfection by mercy. So one example is the wives of the brahmanas, that their husband says they didn't do any sadhana, they didn't do any reformatory activities. And we had the question is, well, why didn't they? One of the students said, why didn't women do these? Historically speaking, we find times in history, in very ancient history, where women did engage in all the reformatory activities. And then we also had times when they didn't. And then we had times again when they did. I'm just thinking about Afghanistan, you know. So 25 years ago, it was so crazy in Afghanistan that women were not allowed to see male doctors. However, they didn't let any women go to school to become a doctor. So there were no female doctors to go to, and you couldn't go to a male doctor. Which basically meant women could never go to the doctor. And then you had, you know, the United States came in and took over. And so for 20 years, women could go to school, and they could get jobs. And now the Taliban are taking over, and they're throwing all the women out of their work and school and like that. So there's times like this. Things change in time. Now, one might say, well, the brahmanas' wives did some sadhana because our acharyas explained that they were hearing about Krishna from the other residents of Vrindavana. So that's certainly a sadhana. So then the example's given of Sukadeva Goswami, who didn't do any sadhana at all. So he was siddha without doing any kind of sadhana. And someone asked the question, are there more examples? And there are more examples in Nectar Devotion, Chapter 17, of Kripa Siddha Sadhana, Kripa Siddhas, that mentions there the residents of the Jungala province, Prahlad Maharaj, and Migrari the Hunter. Migrari the Hunter is a really good example of someone who did absolutely no sadhana and became perfect by mercy of Narada and Parvati Muni. Another example that Rupa Goswami gives is that of Bali, that Bali became perfect without doing any sadhana. Now, again, we can say, well, he surrendered, that's one of the processes of devotional service, but he hadn't been working on any kind of sadhana. Okay, so some explanation of these people. The people who are siddhas, the examples given from 3.15.25, a person who's free from false egotism of material existence or an advanced mystic. Either one could be considered siddha. Another description from 3.15.25, we just broke this up into several slides, that they're so joyful by constant execution of the regulated principles of devotional service that they achieve the special favor of the Supreme Lord. Wow, that's really interesting. That's really interesting that Krishna gives his favor because they're so joyful doing their sadhana. Just think about that for a minute. Prabhupada says, unless we're joyful, we can't make any advancement. So we have a point. Prabhupada Priya said most of the so-called Kripa Siddhas did a lot of sadhana in previous lives. Yes, it's the same point that someone who may be called nitya siddha did sadhana in previous lives. So, you know, often there's some sadhana in the background, but not always. Not always. I mean, I don't think with Magrari there's any background of sadhana in a previous life. And another from that same verse, a symptom. These are symptoms. So we look at this symptom. They're free from false egotism. They're joyful in doing their sadhana. And it's the joy in doing their sadhana that attracts the mercy of the Lord, and that Yamaraj is afraid to go near them. Of course, there's always mercy involved. There's always some mercy involved. And some more symptoms, they express their feelings in such a way that they automatically melt with ecstasy, and many transcendental symptoms become manifested in their bodies. This is, again, the sattvika bhavs. All right, so we're going to have one more breakout room in this half. And I'd like us to discuss here how we personally feel motivated in our bhakti, how we feel, how we personally, we're not here talking about the pure devotees as we did last time, but how we personally feel motivated by those who have attained perfection. Either by those who have attained perfection. So we're not looking at the nityasiddhas. We'll look at the nityasiddhas in the second half of this class. We're looking now, and here we can talk about specific names. So we read about in the Shastra, or we see in our own society, maybe somebody like Jayananda, someone who's attained perfection either by sadhana or by kripa, either by practice of devotion or by mercy. And how do we find, what's the way in which those people impel our own love for Krishna? So 10 minutes, we're going to go into breakout groups. Hare Krishna. I hope you found that enlivening. And now we are going to take a 10-minute break. Please take a real break. Get up, move, drink some water, go outside, have some prasadam, chant some japa, take a real break. Please get away from your phone or your computer. We will be back in 10 minutes. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Welcome back to our Vibhava Alambana Ashraya class. Again, Vibhava, what brings out love in the devotee, love for Krishna. And we have two categories, alambana, basic, and udipana, impelling. They're all stimulants. In the basic, we have two categories, Krishna, who's the object of love, and the devotee, who's the shelter of love, the ashraya. And we discussed in the beginning, in the first part of the class, how devotees who are sadhakas can be an ashraya, and how devotees who become siddhas, either through practice, through sadhana, or through mercy, through kripa. Now we're going to look at the devotees who are always perfect. They were never conditioned souls. They did not become perfect. Sometimes this nityasiddha is applied to someone who became perfect in a previous life and is now perfect. And this, there's some confusion like that, that somebody in some circumstance can be called a sadhana siddha or kripa siddha, and another circumstance can be called a nitya siddha. Because once you become siddha, it's as if you've always been siddha. So the chief quality that Rupa Goswami gives to understand who are the nitya siddhas is their love for Krishna is 10 million times more than their love for themselves. Now, this means that they have a lot of love for themselves. Krishna says in the 6th chapter, those who relish and rejoice in the self. So the self is part of Krishna. Therefore, one must have love for oneself, or one would not be liking a part of Krishna. But although they have boundless, Krishna says, boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses in love for themselves, 10 million times more than that, they love Krishna. He is the self of the self, the Padam Atma. This fact is very nicely described by Sukadeva Goswami when Maharaj Prakrit asks how the residents of Vrindavan loved the expansion of Krishna as the cowherd boys more than their own children. And there he says, we have the greatest love for ourself, and Krishna as the self of the self, we love him even more. All right, so we have Example, given evidence given by Rupa Goswami, where Krishna says, "O beautiful Satyabhama, I have come because of the prayers of Brahma and the Devatas, and my associates have all taken birth with me. O goddess, the Yadavas that you see are all my associates and are full of all qualities like me. They always hold me alone as dear." Here we see different categories of associates. So there are the Devatas. Of course, we know when Krishna appears that sadhakas do also appear. And Satyabhama is a Nityasiddha devotee. She is eternally Krishna's queen. Another example, this is from 10.14.32 of the Bhagavatam. "How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men, and all the other inhabitants of Rajabhumi. There's no limit to their good fortune because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the eternal Brahman, supreme Brahman, has become their friend." So this is more evidence that these persons are Nityasiddhas. Again, when Krishna comes, we know that Sadhana Siddhas, Kripa Siddhas also join, like the personified Vedas, the sages from Ram, and so forth. Now, this is a very interesting evidence that Rupa gives for the fact that these devotees are Nityasiddhas. When the cowherd men go to Nanda, and of course this is in reference to the lifting of Govardhan Hill, they're trying to understand who Krishna is. And so they say, "How is it that we and all the other residents of Raja cannot give up our constant affection for your son?" Now remember, one of the symptoms of a siddha, whether they're sadhana siddha, kripa siddha, or nitya siddha, is it's constant. Their feeling of love for Krishna, they don't get tired of it. It's something that's constant. So they said, "How come we can't give it up?" You know, we find the gopis, like, they'll say, "Oh, I don't want to talk about Krishna anymore," and they can't. And then they say, "And how is it that he's so spontaneously attracted to us?" So some of you asked a question about this, that how does this question of the cowherd men indicate that Krishna is a super soul, that Krishna is God? It's because this kind of attraction cannot exist between jivas. It can only exist between the jiva and God. We find in the Brahma Vimohana Lila, when Brahma stole the boys and the calves, and then Krishna expanded as the boys and the calves. And you remember that the adult cows were running down Govardhan Hill to lick their babies, who were actually Krishna. And the cowherd men were angry and frustrated that they couldn't do their service properly. And they come down and they're smelling the heads of their boys and they're overwhelmed. And Balaram says, "This much affection cannot occur between jivas." So he said, "I thought these calves and boys were jivas, but now I know they must actually be you, because this kind of affection can only happen between the soul and God." Yes, some of the devatas are not Nityasiddhas. So when we go back, if we go back to this, here we see that Krishna is talking to Satyabhama about various categories. So some of those who are with Krishna are Nityasiddhas and some are not. Thank you, Rukmini. All right. So we had a number of people ask questions about this. I always find it interesting when we have a number of different of our participants who all ask the same question. So there's a statement in Nectar Devotion. Srila Prabhupada says, "Anyone who becomes exhilarated by hearing of the pastimes of Lord Krishna when he is present on this earth with his associates is to be understood as a Nityasiddha, eternally perfect." Now, if we look at Bhanu Swami's translation of Rupa Goswami's, this is what I'm seeing that Srila Prabhupada's translated here. Rupa Goswami is explaining this quote that the cowherd men are saying to Nanda Maharaj, "How is it that there's this mutual attraction between us and Krishna?" And Rupa Goswami is explaining this. He says that we can understand their Nityasiddhas from these two phrases, eternal friend And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? So when Srila Prabhupada is saying someone who becomes exhilarated, this is how he's translating Rupa Goswami's explanation of this mutual attraction. This is something beyond a sadhaka who likes reading Krishna book or likes reading the Bhagavatam, or even, you know, we go to somebody out on the street and we distribute a book and they're enjoying the book. So this is beyond that. It's not saying that, wow, I really like this pastime, I must be a nityasiddha. So I hope that clarifies it. And by the way, this is a slide I added because of that question. So again, those of you who are really fully, well, I like to call my students participants rather than students. The participants who are really participating by asking these questions, you really add to the richness of this class. Those of you who are asking questions are like people who bring a preparation to the feast instead of just eating what everybody else cooks. So I really want to thank you. All right. So we also had a number of questions about the use of the word yadavas. The use of the word yadavas. So, the Yadava cowherd people descending by the spiritual planet by the Lord's will take birth with the appearance of Lord Krishna and then return to his eternal Dhamma along with him. The birth of these devotees is not caused by the bondage of karma. And I particularly like this picture because, again, it illustrates this love between the Lord and his devotees. And so why are they called Yadavas? Well, we know that Nanda and Vasudev are related. They have the same father. Vasudev has a Kshatriya mother and Nanda has a Vaishya mother. And so they are still part of the Yadavas. At least some of them are. Maybe not all of them are. Okay, and this statement that Krishna's deeds are transcendental and so are the activities of the Nityasiddhas. So the Nityasiddhas, they're not taking birth by karma. Their activities are not motivated by the modes of nature. Their activities are not motivated by material desires. All of their activities, like the activities of Krishna, are transcendental. Now, we had a question, I think it was by Prabhupada Priya. At what point do our activities become transcendental? When we become siddha, is the answer. Now, of course, even a beginning devotee, even somebody who just says, my dear Lord, from this day on, I am yours. From this day on, I am yours, becomes under the personal protection of Krishna. But that's not quite the same thing as saying that all of their activities are fully transcendental, because we noticed that in the first part of the class, that even those sadhakas who've awakened some of their sthaibha for Krishna, they still have anartas. So Prabhupada notes that just like it's offensive to think you're Krishna, it's offensive to think you're Yasoda or Nanda Maharaj. We don't become these people. They are eternally transcendental nityasiddhas. They're never conditioned souls. You know, I had a friend, not ISKCON devotee, but a friend who thought that he was Hanuman, you know, so that's actually offensive. So it's mentioned that these nityasiddhas definitely have at least these 55 qualities, the first 55 qualities of Krishna. Sometimes it says the first 50 qualities. And those who become siddhas, whether they become siddhas by sadhana or become siddhas by kripa, also will manifest these qualities. That was another question. Yes. So, of course, these first 50 or 55 qualities of Krishna are potential in all jivas. Of course, never quite to the same extent as the Lord. Okay, so we have another breakout session of 10 minutes that... how we and the other pure devotees, so it's like two parts, how we are inspired by the Nityasiddha devotees and how the pure devotees, how those who are already Siddha, are inspired by other Siddha devotees. And we're looking particularly here at Nityasiddhas, how we're inspired by Nityasiddhas and how those who are pure devotees are also inspired by Nityasiddhas in their love for Krishna. So I'm going to do another 10-minute breakout on this. I hope that was enlivening. So we looked at devotees as the shelter, the ashraya, for the basic alambana, impelling or stimulating vibhava, according to their level of attainment. Were they sadhakas or siddhas? And if they were siddhas, were they sadhana siddha? Did they become perfect by practice? Were they kripa siddha? Did they become perfect by mercy? Or nitya siddha, were they always perfect? And we saw that in all four of those who are still practicing with some impurities, the sadhakas, the sadhana siddhas, those who are perfect through their practice, the kripa siddhas, those who are perfect through mercy, and those who've always been perfect, all of them can act as the shelter, the reservoir of love for Krishna, as a stimulant for others. So that a person will be stimulated, their love for Krishna will be brought out by those persons. And when we first talked about vibhava in the first lesson, the overview, I give this example a lot, that when I was waiting to board a plane, we were waiting in a line, in a queue, and there was a little girl there, 2-3 years old, and she was very happy. She was running back and forth to her parents, and seeing her parents' love for her stimulated or brought out a feeling of parental care from the other people waiting in line. So we were stimulated in affection for this child by the child herself and by the way her parents dealt with her. So in that way, one is stimulated in love of Krishna by Krishna and by the devotees. Now, we mentioned that devotees who are ashraya are going to be a devotee who has a similar or the same basic connection or the same sthaibhav. So, in other words, somebody who loves Krishna as their child is going to be stimulated in their love of their child by others who love Krishna as their child. And if people have an incompatible sthaibhav, those people can also stimulate their love for Krishna, but it won't be a basic, it will be an udipana. All right, when looking at this categorizing devotees by their basic relationship or their sthaibhav with Krishna, I want to again emphasize that this applies to all four categories of attainment that we've looked at: the sadhaka, the sadhana siddha, the kripa siddha, and the nitya siddha. And to remind everybody that Rupa did put sadhakas, who still have an artis, quoting the 11th canto description of the Majjhima devotee, as also in this category. There's some implication, therefore, that one can understand one's sthaibhav, one's basic connection with Krishna, as a sadhaka. And in fact, as we explained earlier, in order to practice Raghunuga sadhana, one has to have some idea of one's basic connection with Krishna. We had some people ask a question about seeing Krishna, because the quote given by Rupa Goswami about the sadhakas is that they were seeing Krishna directly. That's Bhaktivasamrita Sindhu 21276. Practitioners are those who have developed rati for Krishna. Rati, someone asked me in a previous class about rati. Rati, basically, Rupa is using rati synonymously with sthaibhav. Rati literally means love, but your basic love. Do I love Krishna as my master, as my friend, as my child, as my lover? So have developed this rati, but they've not completely extinguished the anartas. They're qualified to see Krishna directly. The words was Krishna shakshat. Srila Prabhupada translated this as who is qualified to enter into the kingdom of God. So someone asked the question, is there a difference between the directly seeing of Krishna as a sadhaka and the directly seeing of Krishna as a siddha? And the answer is unequivocally yes. That question is answered very nicely in Madhurya Kadambini about how one sees Krishna fully at prema. That question is also answered very nicely in any discussion of the stages of meditation, which you will find in the Nectar of Instruction purport to text 8. You will also find in Bhaktivinoda's commentary to Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha text 11. You'll also find it in Jivadharma, Harinam Chintamani. It's also by Jiva. I don't remember in which of the Sandarbhas. If you're really interested in that difference, I would refer you to the classes that I give on the stages of meditation, or you can just look at the classes that I give that include Manashiksha text 11. All right, so let's look at this Staibhavas. Here we're just looking at the primary Staibhavas. So there are those who love Krishna in neutral love. Often the cows are in that, are put in that category, the trees, the flowers. So this means that a tree who loves Krishna in Chantaras is enlivened in their love of Krishna by the other trees. You know, materially, trees talk to each other under the ground. I don't know if you knew that. They talk to each other through their leaves and under the ground. So spiritually, the trees enliven one another. The cows enliven one another in their love for Krishna. Servants. So this is those with a feeling of servitude and those who directly take up the role of servant. So here, we're talking about those who actually do service. This also includes Krishna's children. So again, the servants are enlivened in their love for Krishna by the other servants, by those who, right, it's such a sensible, reasonable thing, right? And the friends, just like I'm in, you know, those of you who are my friends, some of you here in this class are friends of mine, and I will be enlivened in my friendship toward you by other people who are also your friends. You know, you get together with a group of friends and you're all enlivening each other in your friendship for each other. The elders, think of how Yasoda and Rohini are enlivening each other. Nanda and the other cowherd men, they're enlivening each other. Nanda has brothers, he has father, and there's so many uncles and aunts. And you were just reading through the Radha Krishna Ganadesh Deepika last night. So the elders are enlivening each other in love for Krishna, and of course, the lovers, the queens are enlivening each other, the gopis are enlivening each other. When we look at devotees as the ashraya, the shelter, the reservoir, think of it like a pot that's holding this nectar, and how that enlivens us, we're particularly going to feel enlivened by others who have the same basic connection, the same staibhav, the same rati. We can be enlivened by other devotees as well, but that's another category of vibhava, which we look at in our next class. All right, there's a couple of additional considerations here, and I'm so happy that people brought this up, devotees brought this up as a question for the previous class and also as a question for this class, but it was appropriate to answer it here. So the question was that it stated that sometimes Krishna himself can be both the Vishaya and the Ashraya. That both these parts of Alambita, remember, Vibhav is the whole stimulant. For those of you who got this the first time, please excuse me that I'm repeating it ad infinitum, because I know it's complicated, I know it's a lot of terms, and part of what you do as a teacher is you make sure you do a lot of repetition of things that need to be memorized and that are hard to memorize. Those of you who got it, you know, or who already knew it, please excuse me for this much repetition. But we have this vibhav, which is the overall what incites, what stimulates one's love of God. And then we have the alambana, the basic, which is Krishna and the devotee, as the Vishaya and the Ashraya. But sometimes Krishna is both. How is that? This was a question asked. So that from the end of Nectar of Devotion, chapter 21, of course right now we're in chapter 25, but this answer is given at the end of NOD chapter 21, the example given that when Krishna expands himself as the boys and the calves. So the boys and the calves are externally, ostensibly, apparently devotees, but they're not devotees, they're Krishna. So in that case, Krishna is acting both as the Vishaya and the Ashraya. Because the friends of Krishna are being enlivened. It's all Krishna's both himself and his devotee. And so Krishna is acting as an enlivening factor, both as himself and as his devotee. Now we also have the Jiva's commentary in 2.1.16, where he says, among the associates in the Lord's pastimes, the distinction of Ashraya and Vishaya takes place in all except the most intimate associates. For the most intimate, among the intimate associates, there is no distinction of Ashraya and Vishaya. In that case, only Krishna as a Lumbana is prominent. Basically, you could say the devotee disappears. And I consulted with some senior Vaishnavas on this, and the conclusion was just like Bhakti Vinod says, my dear Lord, you are everything, right? Janaka Janani Daita Tanai, Prabhu Guru Pati Tuhu Sarvamoy. You are my everything. So for those who are super intimate with Krishna, Krishna is just everything. Yes, and this concept is also explained by Rupa in the Ujjwala Nilamani, what's called the Samartha mood, where there's a real oneness with Krishna in terms of enjoyment. And in other words, the devotee makes absolutely no distinction between their working for their enjoyment and working for Krishna's enjoyment. It's all the same. Krishna's enjoyment is fully their enjoyment. And that is not necessarily the mood of all the devotees in the spiritual world, but it is of the very intimate devotees. Okay, we have one last breakout session. And here we just want to look in general. So we've had breakout sessions where we looked very specifically. How do other sadhakas inspire us, even though they have faults? How do those who've achieved perfection by their practice inspire us? How do those who've achieved perfection through mercy inspire us? How do the Nitya Siddhas inspire us? And, of course, not just us, but we're looking at how the pure devotees are inspired. Imagine the pure devotees are inspired by the imperfect sadhakas. Isn't that far out? The pure devotees, the Nitya Siddha devotees, they're inspired by the imperfect sadhakas. How the pure devotees are inspired by the those who achieve perfection through their sadhana. Think about how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar Pandit were crying about Dhruva and Prahlad. The pure devotees are inspired by those who've achieved sadhana by mercy, and the pure devotees are inspired by those who are always perfect. So we looked at each of these separately. Now we're going to have 10 minutes just to discuss among ourselves in general. What is the role of devotees in general in terms of the development of rasa? Because this is all about rasa. This is all about this taste, this enjoyment. And the idea is that the vibhava is leading to this rasa. So what is the role of devotees in bringing out our rasa? Okay, so this is our last breakout group. If we can have, again, Shakti Swarupini, 10 minutes, please. So here we've seen some of the interplay of the vibhava with the sthaibhav leading to rasa, how the stimulant of the devotees works to bring us rasa. All right, so please get out your reflection journals, whether you're doing that by hand or on your computer, and please take a few minutes. We're going to give you 2 minutes. If you want to do more later after the class, that's very nice. But please write something in your reflection journal about what you've understood, what you've learned, or how you'd like to go further into this, what more you'd like to understand. So 2 minutes. All right. So we have 5 minutes left. Any general questions or discussion on this topic? You can either write in the chat window or raise your hand. Yes, Mahalakshmi.
You were mentioning in the class we were listening how a devotee does not think himself or herself to be Nanda Maharaj or Yashoda. And yet, everyone has an eternal relationship with Krishna. Does this mean that when the practicing devotees become Nitya Siddhas, the increases the amount of devotees who are serving Krishna in the spiritual world? How is that?
Because devotional service is dynamic. Everything is always increasing. Don't worry. Krishna can always get more mothers and more gopis. And he doesn't say, no, there's already enough. It's not like a room, you know, you have a capacity limit. Sorry, we're full. Don't worry. Don't worry, you get in. That was my worry when I first read Krishna book. I thought, all the roles are already taken, you know.
You are?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Kamalini, did you have a question?
Oh, yeah, you know. Oh, I didn't raise my hand yet. But, this point about always being joyful, like Prabhupada said, that you can't make spiritual advancement unless you're joyful. Well, you know, I'm reading this book, I'll Build You a Temple, and it was a lot of anxiety there with all of the many, many different challenges and obstacles. But, I mean, yet Prabhupada was still holding Pandal programs, still preaching. But I'm wondering, like, sometimes in our service, there may be anxiety. So how is that joyful?
What a wonderful...
I mean, we know, like, we're joyful hearing Krishna Katha and sitting peacefully at our computer with no other people around.
Well, joyfulness is not just insipid. It's not just like, hi, I'm happy. You know, if we think about materially what people do to be happy. You know, I always give this example of the entertainment industry. We have this multi-billion dollar entertainment industry. And, you know, movies, computer games, theater, books definitely provoke anxiety, anger, horror, not just comedy. You know, and those are all pleasurable. Or, you know, amusement parks. So you pay money to get on a ride that will make you in anxiety. That's the purpose of the ride. You're paying whatever, however much it costs, whatever. $5, $10, I don't know. You get on this ride, and the entire purpose of the ride is to put you into anxiety. You are completely peaceful. You know, you're just peaceful there with your parents at the amusement park, eating cotton candy, whatever. And then you, Mommy, Daddy, can I go on that ride? Or, you know, when we were little kids at a playground, we'd go on a ride that would spin us around. I can't do this now as an adult, but as a child, right? We would go on a ride to make us feel dizzy. Did you all do that? Or at least you spun around in circles when you were a child to feel dizzy? Everybody did this, yes. So why do people do this? There's varieties of joy. But the point is that they should all be joy. The material perverted rasas are all misery. Even material joy is misery. So if you're feeling material joy, oh, I just got the raise at work. I finished my project. You know, we just had a baby. I just got married, or I just got divorced, or whatever brings people joy, you know. But it's all illusion. there's no real rasa there. The soul is just observing the workings of the modes of material nature. Krishna says the soul's not really doing anything. It's just like in entertainment, there's no real enjoyment. You're watching the hero, you know, of the story. You're reading about the hero doing all these things. You're not doing them. But there is a reality where all of these emotions are experienced. We have the seven secondary sthaibhavs. There's joy and comedy, fear, anger, wonder, chivalry, which has two subdivisions, horror, and one other I can't think of, which I missed. And then we have the vyavichari bhavs. There's like 30 of them or more. All these different waves of emotion, but they're all blissful. And I sometimes give the example also of ice cream. You know, you can go to these shops where they have 30 flavors of ice cream or 50 flavors of ice cream. Or different kinds of pizza. You know, you can get pizza with eggplant on it. You can get pizza with basil. You can get pizza that just has cheese. You can get, you know, it's all pizza. But the flavor is very different. You know? And so there's varieties of joy. But if we're feeling constricted inside, if we're feeling constricted and we're just simply trying to enjoy the material rasas, it's very hard to make spiritual advancement. We want to really be relishing our service, although that relishing will have different flavors. Vinata, you had a question?
Yes, I didn't quite get what was your explanation in the beginning why this sadhaka is not on bhava?
Because Rupa Goswami is quoting the 11th canto.
Because of the quote of the 11th canto.
I see the 11th canto as strong evidence, because the Majjhima devotee, that generally bhava is Uttam Bhakta. You know, generally bhava is... The other bit of evidence is that the devotee in bhava is not generally called a sadhaka. If we look at the rest of Rupa Goswami's work, sadhana stops at bhava. So, if we're going to look holistically, you know, hermeneutics, do you understand a particular statement? So if someone's going to use the particular statement of Bilva Mangala Thakur as the sole evidence that Rupa is giving some strange new definition of sadhaka here, then you have to ignore the quoting of the 11th canto verse, and you have to ignore all the other ways in which Rupa Goswami himself uses sadhaka in the Nectar of Devotion itself and in other places. So therefore, I mean, somebody else might favor another explanation. You could use that one example of Bilva Mangala Thakur and skew your whole argument that way. There would be some validity to it. But I would posit that it's more hermeneutically sound to go by the general understanding of a sadhaka and to go by the 11th canto. And Rukmini, and this will be the last one. Yes, Rukmini, and then we'll end. I'm sorry, I really, really try to be punctual. It's one of my principles. Rukmini?
Oh, well, I don't know, maybe this question is too long, but one of the things you were talking about was how like siddhas could be inspired by sadhakas, and on the other hand, we're told to seek association which is sajatiya, snigdha, and shresht, so of the same type, affectionate and senior. And isn't there some danger of sort of being drawn into some misunderstanding? Even very new people can be very inspiring because they are very enthusiastic. But then at the same time, in Madhurya Kadambini, it says that, you know, excessive enthusiasm is one of the stages, this utsaha. Anyway, so whatever you can say about that.
Okay, well, first of all, the devotee as Ashraya would be a devotee who has the same rati as oneself, the same sthaibhava as oneself. Almost always. If a devotee has a different sthaibhava, then there can be an udipana. And we're talking about sadhakas who've already have some development, therefore, of rati. We're not talking about kanista devotees. We are talking about madhyama devotees. That, I think, Rupa makes abundantly clear. And madhyama devotees who have some rati. My own realization on this, and this is my own realization of this, is that masters are also inspired by students who are doing well. And masters are inspired in their own study by students who are doing well. At least this is my experience even on an ordinary level as a teacher. I have been coaching one 9-year-old, I believe, in Perth, Australia, who gives really, really Bhagavatam class. So any of you know Ananda Tirtha and Radha Sundari, so he's their son. So extraordinary parents. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree. He was evidently teaching a class in deity worship when he was 3. His father was teaching the class. His father was called out. His parents are secretaries to the GBC. His father is the secretary to the GBC body. His mother is the secretary to the GBC executive committee. So his father was teaching a class on deity worship and was called out from some GBC business, and the 3-year-old child took over the class. So at 9, he's giving classes in Perth, and I became his teacher in how to give a class. So we had a number of sessions, how to organize your material, how to organize your delivery. So I felt enlivened in my own teaching by seeing a student who was doing well in the same area. So again, this is, you know, I'm not a Siddha devotee, so I can't really say how the Siddha devotees feel. That would be a lot of hubris. But it makes some sense to me that the Siddhas, even the Nitya Siddhas, when they see a sadhaka who's awakened their rati for Krishna, even to a small extent, that very much enlivens them in their own bhakti. It enlivens them in their feeling for Krishna. So, you know, Mother Yasoda, Mother Rohini, the other elderly gopis, they, when they see that little Krishna Das on planet Earth in the four-headed Brahma's universe has started to realize that in the spiritual world that he's one of Krishna's mothers, that Mother Yasoda and Mother Rohini get so enlivened in their own love for Krishna. And I'll close with a little story. Many years ago, I was working on books for children. And when I was working on these books, I had very little savings, and I had no income, and I had no real support network in the beginning. I mean, very small. I had a few devotees, maybe 4 or 5 devotees that were kind of a support network. I hadn't really published books before except on a copy machine, and I had no hope at all of being able to publish these books when I was writing them on my computer with no hope. And so every day, many times a day, I meditated on Radha Krishna and the other gopis, looking at the finished books and smiling. Being enlivened, that was my meditation, and I offered that mental picture many times a day, every day, for 3 years. So Krishna sent 200 people to help, he sent people to donate, he sent people who spent their money directly. I mean, he sent everything we needed to get this done. He sent a publishing house that agreed to do it at their cost. So we were working with I was at a meeting at the publishers, and he said, well, we've made a design for the box in which we'll put the books. And the publisher is Bengali, but, you know, not exactly a devotee, sort of, kind of ish. And anyway, one of the Britishers, completely not a devotee, not even Indian, nothing, was designing the box cover. And she had an idea to combine the illustrations from the books with photographs. So there's one of the books where Radha and Chitra are trying to find Krishna after he disappears from the Rasalila. And there's one where they're looking down, they're putting their hands like this. They're putting their hands like this, and they're looking at Krishna's footprints. So she had taken that illustration of Radha and Chitra looking down with their hands like this, and what she put as a photograph there were the children reading the books. And this was, practically speaking, my identical mental picture that I had been meditating on every day for 3 years. And here this non-devotee manifested this picture. So from that I understood that that Krishna himself and the Nityasiddha devotees are indeed very enlivened in their own spiritual life from the sadhakas. I took that as a mystical evidence. All right, so we'll see you next week. We're going to go back to Thursdays. This was our only Saturday. I noticed not as many people came today. I guess Saturday isn't as conducive for a lot of people. So we're going to go back to Thursdays. The rest of the classes will be on Thursday. And next week we're going to be doing the last section of the Vibhava, the Udipanas. Again, reminding you to have your questions. You can turn your questions into Shakti Swarupini anytime, starting now. but anytime, but 24 hours in advance is the last that I can get them. So thank you very much. Whatever good you have seen here is due to Srila Prabhupada and all of my teachers, and whatever bad is here is all my responsibility. Please do not, I hope that my bad has not offended you, and please do not take that on board. Thank you. Srila Rupa Goswami ki jai. Srila Prabhupada.
Recording stopped.
Hare Krishna.